content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Washington Post. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. The COVID-19 pandemic has definitely changed how we travel. It's also given pause to future travel plans as we work to overcome the virus and find our way back to some sense of normalcy. Writer Jennifer Molson of the Colorado Springs Gazette tells us about a Wander Women group who gave up regular life to hike, bike, and kayak despite the pandemic. Her story was reprinted in the March 19, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. Retirement has been sweet for the Wander Women. After saying goodbye to the old 9-to-5 in 2015, three former Colorado Springs residents didn't sink back into the couch with a box of bonbons and their daytime stories and call it a day. Partners Christy Burns, Annette Demmel, and their friend Lynn Edmiston sold everything they owned, including their homes, bought RVs, and hit the road in search of adventure. We decided to retire so we could do these big hikes and live our lives while we were young enough to do the things we wanted to do, says Burns, 56. The big life change probably came as no surprise to those who know them, as Burns and Demmel have backpacked for decades. Edmiston, now 63, decided to get in shape when she was 50 and joined the couple on their summer and weekend trips. We're trying to age as gracefully as we can, says Burns, a former mental health therapist. We're trying to get out of our comfort zone, so we're using our brain all the time. When we're traveling in the RV, we're in new places all the time. We're looking at maps, trying to find new places to hike and bike. It's always unfamiliar and changing. Getting uncomfortable looks different for everyone. Maybe it's having a pebble in your shoe on a mile-long walk or an early morning wake-up call to hike a 14er. For these women, it means walking 10-plus hours a day for months on end, bagging long through trails around the country, visiting as many state and national parks as possible, biking as many rails to trails, conservancy bike paths as they can find, and kayaking on national scenic rivers. Altogether, they've accrued about 6,200 long-distance through hiking miles since 2015, traveled to 39 states in their RV, and visited almost 50 national parks, nearly 80 national monuments, 6 national scenic rivers, 6 national seashores, and 3 national lakeshores. And there are zero plans to stop anytime soon. Colorado Trail. The Colorado Trail, all 500 miles of it, from southwest of Denver to Durango, was their first big post-retirement accomplishment. In 2016, they checked off the Oregon Coast Trail at 425 miles. There was the Superior Hiking Trail in Minnesota, clocking in at 300 miles, and the 100-mile Lone Star Hiking Trail in Texas. In 2019, they conquered the self-describing grueling 2,200-mile Appalachian Trail, the oldest of the national scenic trails. It took them 6 months, 9 days, and 5 pairs of shoes, each for Burns and Demmel. Most recently, the couple finished the 2,700-mile Continental Divide Trail, which saw them each go through 6 pairs of shoes, 70 packs of tuna, 130 cheese sticks, and 18 10-ounce bags of peanut M&Ms. Edmiston was able to join them for 900 miles, but had to leave due to a job. What we would want for people is to go out there and do as much as you can, Demmel says. You don't have to go out and do a whole trail, but give yourself some kind of challenge. Go out and just try it. It's such a great feeling to be out and have everything you need with you. Backpacking skills, those skills are pretty acquirable. Many of their adventures have been documented on the Wander Women's increasingly popular YouTube channel, something Burns started in 2018 so their friends and family could tag along on their journeys. The videos are anywhere from 1 to 2 minutes to upward of 40 minutes, and detail not only their daily walks, but other often humorous side notes, such as caring for aging hikers' feet, searching for Florida's scrub jay, and exploring the contents of Burns' 25-pound pack. There also are regular appearances by Pesky, an annoying hiker who seems determined to ruin the Wonder Woman's good times. Spoiler alert, Pesky is a character played by Demel just for laughs. Their YouTube fans can't get enough of her, the women say. I remember on the AT, the Appalachian Trail, when the Wonder Women said they had a rule not to complain or whine, as some do, definitely me at times, so that when something was really needing addressing, it was taken seriously, wrote fan Kelly the Fifth on their video documenting the completion of the Continental Divide Trail, or CDT. That really struck me, and when I hike, or even just in life, I try to think about that. Watching these films through COVID was such a bright spot. Burns believes it's also their older age that attracts interest from others in a similar age bracket. Part of their plan has always been to encourage others to get out and try new things. People would write us and say, "I've joined the Y. I'm moving more. I'm getting outside and hiking," she says. Don't be a victim to your life. Create it. Surround yourself with beauty and connect with people and create a tribe with people. Older people need something sometimes. You can really keep going and do amazing things. Pandemic hiking. Before the pandemic and ensuing lockdowns chained many to their homes last year, the threesome had plans to do some long hikes in Scotland. That trip got canceled, so they headed to the Pacific Crest Trail, which snakes from Southern California to Canada, and was made famous in Cheryl Strayed's best-selling 2012 memoir, Wild. The group did 2 days' worth before getting an email from a Trails Coalition recommending all hikers return home due to the virus. So they settled instead for the CDT, a hike that inspires great fear in some due to its proximity to grizzly country in Wyoming and Montana. You have to be okay living in the wilderness with grizzly, says Burns, who doesn't seem easily scared. Even people we met on the Appalachian Trail who came out to do the Continental Divide Trail don't necessarily like it because it's so wild and you're so high, Demel says. You have to deal with lightning storms and all that stuff we're totally used to in the West. In what's called a flip-flop, the women started from the Colorado and Wyoming border and walked up to Canada before flying back to Colorado and walking the second half from Colorado to Mexico. They started in June and returned in October. When we first got on the trail, we went 3 weeks without seeing another hiker. That's how remote you are, Demel says. Thousands of people every year attempt the Appalachian Trail, but just a few hundred people do the Continental Divide Trail. Learning to trust. These are the ladies you want to gather with around the campfire late at night as you sit back and listen to their colorful tales. Some are about the incessant hiker hunger and that bordering on anxiety feeling of knowing you don't have quite enough in your pack to feel comfortable. But this is when, the women say, the trail always provides. These are the teachable moments when one must surrender to life and trust. Burns remembers one such 9-day stretch on the Continental Divide Trail. They felt weak and stopped to rest. They hadn't seen another person in weeks, but suddenly 4 people on horses came clomping down the trail. They stopped to exchange pleasantries, and when they learned the women were running low on food, began pulling loads of goodies from their saddlebags. You definitely let go of worrying about what you are going to do, Demel says. You keep moving forward. We'll figure it out. Once when I was a kid traveling with my parents, I remember seeing trailers being pulled by a car or truck. My dad told me that most likely they were going somewhere on vacation or maybe even moving to a new location. It was my introduction to a different way of getting out and seeing the world. I also recall certain trailers that stood out more than others. They were silver and shiny. And I liked many trailers that varied in looks and colors. Turns out those silver shiny ones were the Cadillacs of trailers. They were Airstreams. Writer Elaine Zimmerman reports that Airstreams are enjoying pandemic-era popularity. This special report first appeared in the Washington Post and was reprinted in the March 13, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. Last June, Amy Jaron bought a $42,000 Airstream trailer sight unseen from a dealer in Vermont. The 16-foot 2020 Bambi floor model was the last one on the lot. and I could sell mine tomorrow for more than I paid for it, Jarence, who's age 49, says. That may not be an exaggeration. Despite being forced to close for 6 weeks early in the pandemic, retail sales at Airstream dealerships jumped 22% in 2020, and demand is still on the rise. It's beyond anything we anticipated, says Airstream Chief Executive Bob Wheeler. The growing popularity of Airstreams is part of a surge in sales of all recreational vehicles during the coronavirus pandemic. RV shipments set new records in November and December of last year, according to the RV Industry Association. But Airstream, which will celebrate its 90th birthday this year, has found a new audience with its nostalgic cache. Its founder, Wally Byam, named his invention with its rounded curves and polished aluminum body an Airstream because it moved down the road, he said, like a stream of air. Every trailer is still made by hand. Each rivet requires the labor of two people. Perhaps because Byam grew up in the boomtown along the Oregon Trail, or because he started the company in California, Airstream has long been an iconic symbol of the West and the great American road trip. It has been featured in movies from What's Eating Gilbert Grape to Legally Blonde, and counts Matthew McConaughey, Sean Penn, and Sandra Bullock among its fans. President John F. Kennedy once used an Airstream as a mobile office in New Mexico. Now in the midst of a pandemic, it is receiving another boost as Americans weather profound shifts in how and where they work and learn. When her youngest child left for college, Amy Jaron sold her house in suburban Portland. And that was Portland, Maine. And then she moved to a small condominium downtown a few blocks from her job at a nonprofit. But life in the city didn't suit her, so Jaron put the home up for sale in March 2020, just weeks before the state shut down because of COVID. The uncertainty of the real estate market and the world at large pushed her to downsize again, this time keeping just what could fit into an Airstream, in which she is now living, working and traveling for the foreseeable future. I love that it's so simple, just a two-burner gas stove and mini-fridge, Jaron says. The only thing I would change on the layout is the ability to remove the dinette table so I could practice yoga inside on rainy days. Airstream dealerships closed their doors in March with full inventories, on average about 40 vehicles. Now many are down to just six or seven. It will take a year for the company to fulfill existing orders, said Wheeler. That kind of backlog is unprecedented, he said. It's like nothing I've seen in my 19 years at this company. The pandemic has also ushered in a new Airstream customer base. Many of its new customers, 56% during the past 8 months, are new to RV life, said Wheeler. The vehicles have traditionally attracted couples and singles, but this year there were more families. In response to customer requests, Airstream is also building a variation of its Flying Cloud model with a new floor plan. This one, says Wheeler, has a separate tech-enabled office, including being Wi-Fi ready, and with hookups for a computer and mounted monitor. The new model goes for, now get this price, $107,000. Giovanni Sorella, director of Three Revolutions Future Mobility Program at the University of California at Davis, has been studying how the pandemic has affected mobility and says the widespread adoption of remote work has enabled greater flexibility to travel, but not for everyone. It's true mostly for higher-income individuals and white-collar workers, he says, noting that the option of remote work is far less prevalent among lower-income and minority employees, who are also more likely to be essential workers. Airstream owners have an average income of at least about $150,000, according to the company. New Airstreams cost between $39,000 and $177,000. And owning an Airstream can be more expensive than it looks. Kate Oliver, age 35, founder of the Modern Caravan, an Airstream renovation business, and her wife, Ellen Press, 34, renovated and lived in a 1957 Airstream Overlander, as well as other Airstreams from 2016 until June 2020, when the couple bought their first house. The cost of gas, propane for heating and cooking, insurance, and camping ground fees, among other expenses, can add up, she says. You could really go bare bones, and yes, some do, but I think a lot of people that choose to live this way are privileged to be able to make that choice, Oliver said. These are the kind of customers that come to Denny Stone, 62, owner and head of a design for SoCal Vintage Trailer in San Diego, and I guess that should be Southern California Vintage Trailer, but it's spelled C-O-S-O-C-A-L, SoCal. Anyway, the company offers high-end bespoke renovations for Airstreams and similar vintage trailers. A full renovation averages about $125,000, says Stone, but can reach more than $300,000, including disassembly of the trailer, structural repairs, and the replacement of nearly all of its components other than the aluminum exterior. More customers are now requesting new types of customizations, including fitting in an office or coffee station, he said. Although business has been steadily increasing for years, when California implemented its stay-at-home order, Stone was hit with a surge of calls and emails. The increased demand was crazy, he says. Many of those calls were urgent, looking for finished, restored vintage trailers, something that could be bought off his lot, which Stone said he couldn't provide. Those that ultimately became new customers, willing to wait 3 to 6 months to get their trailers into Stone's shop, often had an interest in RVing and Airstreams pre-pandemic. The coronavirus just pushed them to take the next step. Finding an updated Airstream can be difficult. Ward Chandler, founder of Airstream Hunter, a community he started in 2016 for buying and selling Airstreams, says 2020 was his best year yet, with transactions up about 250% compared with the previous year. Demand far outstripped supply, says Chandler, and the thing people wanted more than ever before was an Airstream that was ready to use. Others are willing to wait. Emma Dwerk, 27, and Mitch Budden, 28, were living in Ann Arbor, Michigan in 2019 when they decided to buy an RV and do some traveling, hoping to eventually transition to working remotely and living on the road full-time. They initially wanted an Airstream, but its high price tag made it unaffordable. At the end of January 2020, they bought a 2004 Fleetwood Jamboree, and Budden and his father began renovating it. But when the pandemic shut down Michigan, their timeline accelerated. Dirk's job at an organizational development consultancy became remote, and then she was furloughed because of the pandemic. Budden had left his job in tech the month before the pandemic shutdowns began and was already working from home as a freelancer, designing websites and writing custom code. She and Budden decided to take the plunge and live full-time in the RV, relying on the money they had been saving for extended trips. My last day at work, we began driving west, Dirk said. We both recognize how lucky we are that we can do this, Budden said. Obviously, I would never have wished for a pandemic, but it wound up being a good year for us. It put everything in a different perspective. And the couple will soon move to Denver to work for a few years and save up to buy their own Airstream. So there you go. You know, college towns are another place that people like to travel occasionally. Writer Tiffany Cassidy traveled to the well-known college community of Oxford, England, just over a year ago, just before the COVID began. And there she discovered Oxford walking tours that focus on often glossed-over parts of the city's history. Her story appeared in the February 28, 2020 issue of The Washington Post. There is no dearth of Oxford City tours. Among them are outings that focus on the city's architecture, ghosts, pubs, and literary history. There is even one dedicated to Inspector Morris, but I was drawn to a different one. On a recent overcast Sunday afternoon, I joined a handful of strangers for an uncomfortable Oxford tour, a 90-minute guided walk that promised a lively discussion of imperialism, gender, and inequality against the city's beautiful backdrop. The tour started out in front of Oriel College's Rhodes Building, a stunning Edwardian edifice, where the student guide posed a question. What do we really know about Cecil Rhodes, whose high street statue looks down on all of us? You may know the name from the Rhodes scholarships created from his bequest, but did you know also that much of his money came from his South African diamond mining company, De Beers, which at one time racially segregated its migrant laborers and locked them in compounds for the duration of their contracts? Rhodes' money paid for both the building and the statue we were standing under, which bears a Latin inscription acknowledging his generosity. As the tour's name suggests, starting with one of Oxford's most controversial historical figures is very much the point. Our walk was designed to make participants feel uneasy. Over the course of the tour, our guide pointed out buildings funded by slavery, cited polarizing figures who have spoken at Oxford University's debate hall, and invited us to share our views. Tours that explore the troubling aspects of a destination's history are a growing travel trend. The exhibitionist Uncomfortable Arts Tours in London demonstrate how colonialism shaped many art collections. In Berlin, Refugee Voices Tours spotlight the refugee rights movement and explore the challenges faced by local asylum seekers. Sydney Barani's website includes a map that allows visitors to take self-guided tours to historical Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander sites. The founders of Uncomfortable Oxford say the emphasis on discussion sets their tours apart. Participants are asked to voice their opinions and listen to the opinions of strangers from around the world. They want visitors to leave thinking about more than the beautiful architecture they've just seen. They should be walking away with more questions than when they came, and they should apply those questions to every space they walk into next, said Paula Larson, who co-founded the company with Olivia Duran last year. Analysis of your built environment as you walk through it, is how she puts it. In front of the Rhodes statue, opinions flew. In 2015, our guide told the group the protest movement Rhodes Must Fall asked for its removal. Someone pointed out that taking down the statue might erase history. Perhaps the best option is to add a sign or physical symbol next to the statue that provides context. Others discussed how, in light of Rhodes' opinions on race, he famously observed that the British were the finest race in the world and should inhabit as much of it as possible. The sheer presence of the statue might make students of the college uncomfortable. It's these kinds of topics that Uncomfortable Oxford wants to tackle with local examples. Controversial statues exist everywhere, Duran said. Our next stop was in front of All Souls College. It's a large building that you can barely see through an ornate black and gold gate. As we stood outside its walls, the guide explained the prestigious college's connection to the slave trade. In 1710, Christopher Codrington donated a large sum for the college's library. Most of the Codrington wealth came from sugar plantations worked by slaves in the Caribbean. To address the legacy, the college recently created an annual scholarship for students from Caribbean nations. Responding to pressure from students, it also mounted a plaque outside the library that reads, "In memory of those who worked in slavery on the Codrington plantations in the West Indies." The plaque wasn't visible during the tour, however, as it sits behind a door often closed to the public. The group discussed whether the plaque is a sufficient acknowledgement of the past and whether there's good in the fact that students are getting academic opportunities because of money made from their ancestors' suffering. We stopped in front of the Oxford Union, the storied home of the university's debating society. It's widely seen as a place for Britain's future politicians to practice their debating and campaigning chops. The group also invites people from around the world to speak. They range from actors Ian McKellen and Morgan Freeman to controversial political figures such as President Trump's erstwhile advisor Stephen K. Bannon and Marine Le Pen, leader of France's far-right party. Again, the guide posed a question to the group, is it right to give people a platform to discuss hurtful ideas? Well, down the road next to the Terror War Memorial in Bond Square, we were asked to think about how we as a society remember fallen soldiers. Next, we came to the Bodleian Library, where only men would have studied for many years. Women weren't admitted to the university until 1878, and even then couldn't receive degrees until 1920. The guide asked why women would choose to come to the university if they couldn't receive degrees. One person suggested it could be to make a statement, while another countered that it could be to find a husband. Exchanges of opinion are welcome on the tour. It's part of the anti-shame and anti-blame space the directors hope to create, making room for as many people to share their experiences and thoughts as possible. It's uncomfortable for maybe an hour, Larson said. Then you're forever more productive in these conversations because you've had them before. In addition to the original Uncomfortable Tour, the company offers walks, including Oxford and Empire, which focuses on how the University of Oxford and the British Empire shaped each other, and Uncomfortable Literature, which examines authors overshadowed by Oxford literary celebrities such as J.R.R. Tolkien and Lewis Carroll. Both Larson and Duran plan to graduate from the university this year, and they're looking to expand the tours to other locations in Britain and possibly France. Duran, who is French, is considering an uncomfortable Bordeaux. In the meantime, the group's first planned expansion will be to Blenheim Palace, a UNESCO World Heritage Site a short drive from Oxford and the birthplace of Winston Churchill. "There's lots of uncomfortable things to talk about," Larson said. And by the way, the writer, Tiffany Cassidy, is also a writer based there in Oxford, and she is on Twitter at Tiff Cassidy, T-I-F-F, Tiff Cassidy, and that's C-A-S-S-I-D-Y. Writer Brian Rathbone of the Bend, Oregon paper The Bulletin reports that during the COVID pandemic, two teens found joy going outside. Now, his article was republished in the March 13, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. Bend, Oregon teens Eli Zatz and Alex Lockman spoke fondly of a late September night up on Broken Top in the Three Sisters Wilderness, where they spent hours trying to capture the night sky on their iPhones using rocks to circumvent the lack of a tripod to get a steady photo. That night, trying to capture the stars is when the two friends discovered a love of photography. For nearly 6 months, Zatz and Lockman have been exploring the world of photography and capturing the scenery of Central Oregon. "It just opened up a new world for me," said the 15-year-old Lockman. "I take a camera with me everywhere I go now." Rather than learning to bake a perfect sourdough loaf, the two began taking a camera on their adventures throughout the pandemic when some activities became limited. "We ended up going on a lot of backcountry wilderness adventures, and it was really fun to take a camera along so that we could take some fun pictures," said the 16-year-old Zatz. "The photography aspect is a product of the cool stuff that we like going to do, like going climbing or going whitewater kayaking." The two have traveled to Joshua Tree National Park in California, backpacked through the Sierra Nevada Mountains and Eastern Oregon Strawberry Mountains, and rock climbed City of Rocks in Idaho. In Central Oregon, areas close to home have provided more than enough material to hone their newfound craft. In the mornings before the sun came up, Lockman would put on his fishing waders to capture ice mushrooms that formed over the rocks in Tumalo Creek near Tumalo Falls. "When out at Smith Rock, climbing it is a great opportunity to capture the area's formations and climbers scaling the rocks. I'm not up to his climbing levels," Zatz said of Lockman. "So when we both go climbing, I take pictures of him." Whenever they are backcountry skiing at Black Crater north of the Three Sisters, they make sure to take time to snap photos to remember their experiences. "It's pretty cool to create stuff," Zatz said. "It's cool to capture things you think are cool and then show it to other people." The two have leaned on Eli's father, Daniel Zatz, a professional photographer, as well as reading through books and tutorials on YouTube to learn the technical side of their Rebel T6 and Canon EOS 5D cameras. "I've been around cameras all my whole life, and so I'm used to taking photos," Zatz said. "I would say I began taking it more seriously when the pandemic hit." So there you go. Take your camera and enjoy it during this time. Great reason to get out, right? And that's the reason we have to say goodbye on today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments or questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.